Today on The Grave Talks, inside the Warren's Occult Museum, a conversation with Eric Vitale, member of the New England Society for Psychic Research. Ed and Lorraine Warren made a life out of investigating the paranormal and helping people escape from the dark. Part of that process sometimes involved removing haunted objects from people's homes and keeping them safe in what would become known as the Warren's Occult Museum. For the first time in history, a professional paranormal investigation was conducted by the New England Society for Psychic Research at the museum. Today, we discuss their findings and the spirits that came through with Eric Vitale.
Well, Ed and Lorraine Warren formed the New England Society for Psychic Research in 1952. They started going on lots of cases, investigating lots of hauntings, and they basically just got to a point where they're like, "We need to start a society, and we need a place for these haunted items that we've been bringing back to our home." Because in the beginning, some of these items were kind of spread throughout their home, because not too many people know this, but the Occult Museum is actually, it's attached to Ed and Lorraine Warren's home. You have their home, and then there's what Ed used to call the haunted passageway. And you can walk through the house, through this haunted passageway, into the Occult Museum. So it started back in 1952, actually. And the most well-known haunted item, obviously, is Annabelle. And at first, he would just have her sitting in a chair. Time would pass, and we had a case made for her. But in the beginning, she was just sitting on a chair with a rope in front of her that said, "Do not touch."
Mm-hmm. Was there, before we get into Annabelle and all that, when they decided to create, you know, this, you know, annex almost of their home, to put these objects in that they have collected over the years on various cases, was there a specific reason other than, you know, it gets kind of cluttered having those things around your house? Was there anything? Was there anything that was going on where they said, "Let's get this out of the living room"?
Well, there wasn't like there was haunted items all over their home, but I've seen photos where there's some things that were like in the living room, and I'm like, "Oh, that's in the museum. Oh, that's in the museum." I think Ed just wanted an area for all of the things. Plus, he liked to have the proof of these objects so people can see that. And a big thing that Ed always wanted to let people know is that the devil existed. So this was the proof. These were a lot of cursed items that have dark entities attached to them. And there's quite, every time I'm in there, I see something new. And I've been in there quite a few times now.
Was there any accounts ever of Ed or Lorraine or anybody having anything happen, you know, in the house prior to the museum with the objects just kind of being displayed within the area of where one is living?
I remember hearing a story that they would go out, and like Annabelle would be, I don't know if she'd be in the museum or a certain part of the house, most likely the museum. This is going way back in like the early 70s. They would go out, they'd come back home. Annabelle would be sitting in Ed's recliner when they walked into the living room. This doll used to teleport. She would move on her own. That's one story that always stuck out to me, that she actually would be in the museum. They would leave the house, go out, run errands, come back home, and then there's Annabelle sitting in the living room when they walk through the front door. That's pretty creepy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's interesting. And you use the word teleport there, because I think a lot of times when you think of, you know, the Annabelle doll, and this probably comes more so from, you know, movies and people's imagination more than anything else, is the idea of this doll getting up and walking around and going to its location. When something like that would happen, do you believe it is a literally a teleportation type thing, or is it somehow being moved and dragged there? Or when that thing would move? I mean, obviously you weren't there at the time when this was happening to them, but it's just kind of, you know, what's your feeling on it?
I've never witnessed this, but as I would hear the stories that Ed would say, I mean, this is when I say teleport, basically she would dematerialize. Mm-hmm. And reappear at another location. This is something I've never witnessed. it's a little scary to think about it, that something could be that strong that could actually happen. But as far as I know, that has not happened in a very long time. And I'm talking way back to like the 70s before they started having the binding prayers happening all the time. Like a priest comes by once a month. This has been going on for years now. This was in the early, early stages before there was even a case, because Lorraine actually had a case built for Annabelle, and she had a carpenter come over, and he was down there building it, and it's attached to the wall, and the same case is still down there. There's a different haunted doll in that case now. But he was, something frightened him and he left and he didn't want to finish and he never came back. There's two other cases for Annabelle, actually. We have one when we bring her to events, which is a bit lighter. And our senior lead investigator, Dan Rivera, actually infused the stain with holy water and holy oil before he painted the case. And the St. Michael prayer is on it. There's three crosses on it that represents the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, you know, the Holy Trinity. So we take proper precautions with how we keep her mm-hmm. and when we have to move her.
And I'd love to jump kind of more into that in just a little bit. But before we do, let's dive into the story a bit of Annabelle and what, sure. what the real story is, not what we've seen necessarily in movies and such and how things have been. You know, there's tidbits here that are accurate, but let's talk about the real story. How far back does it
I'll
go? Let's begin with that.
Okay, well, first of all, the movies, total Hollywood fabrication. Mm-hmm. They're cool horror movies, but that's not the true story at all. Ed and Lorraine Warren got Annabelle in 1970. It was a case that they had in Hartford, Connecticut. There were two women living in an apartment together, and one of the girls had the doll gifted to her by her mother. Her mother got it in an antique store, but nobody knows anything about where it actually came from prior to that. If it was used in some type of weird ritual, they just know that they got it from an antique store. So these two girls are living together. They're in Hartford, Connecticut. They're nurses. And they would treat the doll as if it was a real person. They would bring it to the kitchen table with them. They even put a little a bracelet on her that says Anna, that is still on the doll to this day. They started noticing things. One day she rose her hands and put them up on a kitchen table, and they weren't scared. They were intrigued by this. These girls weren't scared at all. They had a friend of theirs that would come by sometimes, a young man, and he was freaked out by this. He's like, this is not right. Like, that doll is evil. I don't like this doll. He ended up taking a nap one day at the apartment. He had a dream about the doll, and when he woke up, he had psychic wounds across his chest. He was bleeding. I don't remember their names, but this was back in 1970, and Ed and Lorraine would always try and get them to come and do their lectures, and they never wanted to talk about it. They were really scared. So they got in contact with Ed and Lorraine because they were making the rounds back then. People knew who they were. They got in touch with Ed and Lorraine, and they came to the house, and they said that they told them everything that was going on. I'm just remembering now. They would actually also find pieces of parchment paper all around the house, and it would say things like, miss me, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any parchment paper in the house. So they had Ed and Lorraine come in, and they basically told them everything that's going on. And they said that they actually had a psychic medium come in, that the psychic medium said, well, there's a little girl inside that doll, and her name's Annabelle. She was killed in a car accident. And Ed and Lorraine immediately knew that was not true, because God would never let the spirit of an innocent little girl inhabit a doll. This was something demonic. This is an inhuman spirit that was using that doll as a conduit in order to gain recognition by these young people. And its main purpose was to possess them. Ed and Lorraine took it back to the museum, and that was in 1970.
Was there any sort of fear with Ed and Lorraine of taking this doll that's been doing these things and bringing it into their house? I mean, I know that they did everything they could, you know, for protection from this. Mm-hmm. But you got to think a little bit, you know, especially, you know, they had a little girl at the time, too. Is, yeah. Can you completely protect yourself from something like that?
Ed and Lorraine were extremely religious. Mm-hmm. Their faith meant a lot to them. And I've been on the team for about a year and a half now, and the stories I've heard about Ed was like the Archie Bunker of like the paranormal. I mean, Ed would go into a haunting and it was like fixing a TV. You know, it was like his life's work. He didn't really get scared by these things. He did what he had to do, and he wanted to help people. Mm-hmm. So they had brought the doll back, but on the way back home, their car, they almost got into an accident. The car kept jerking, and Ed turned around and threw holy water on the doll.
Wow. So once they get the doll back to their place, and it's eventually then put into, you know, the museum, is that kind of the end of what it's been doing, other than kind of what we talked about early on, where it had moved around the house a little bit?
Yes, as far as I know, yes.
Okay.
I just heard stories of it teleporting here and there in the early days, but mm-hmm. as long as I've been in contact with these people, and I've known everyone for about 6-7 years now, nothing's happened. There was a little scare at an event a few years back, I remember. She was actually on display, and the lock actually like just shot up.
Oh wow!
Like the case unlocked itself.
Mm-hmm. Is there precautions that are made? I mean, obviously, I know the case has the way that you described how it was made, with holy water being mixed in with the stain and things of that nature. Are there other precautions that are made other than kind of keeping it where people can't obviously pick it up and touch the doll? Are there other things that go on to keep this thing at bay? And do you guys think that there is still something connected to this specific doll?
Well, you heard that EVP, didn't you, now, Tony?
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute, yeah.
I don't know, but why would you want to take that risk?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we take these proper precautions when we have to move her. Ed told Tony how to move her when and if he has to. So whenever we have to move her, we do what Ed told Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen Dan move her a couple of times. There's a lot of holy water involved. Basically, you do not want your aura to mingle with that aura of whatever may be attached to that doll still. You never want your skin to touch the skin. I'm sorry, to touch the fabric of the doll.
Sure.
So that's why Ed told Tony, if you're going to move her, you need to soak gloves in holy water. First, soak your hands in holy water. Put the gloves on or a blanket. Cover a blanket with holy water and just wrap her around, pick her up, and move her to the next location. And that's what's been done when we move her from case to case.
Here's an interesting question, and this applies, I think, probably to Annabelle and probably to the greater thought of all the objects that are in that museum. Why not do some sort of exorcism or try and exorcise whatever is on these objects or in these objects out of them? Because these objects obviously didn't start, or many of them probably did not start being haunted objects. They started just as a doll or whatever it may be. And we hear stories all the time, and you have too, I know, where, you know, people try and get something out of their house or out of an object in their house or get whatever is attached to it away. Has that ever been a thought with something like Annabelle, or is there a reason for just kind of leaving it where it's at?
That has been done, yes. But just because that ritual is done, it doesn't mean it's gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when people have exorcisms done, it takes numerous exorcisms before they're finally exorcised. Our religious advisor, Mike Salerno, did an exorcism on Annabelle the night of the investigation, along with a couple of other items.
And what happened with that exorcism?
It was just to protect us. Mm-hmm. We did our prayers before we started the investigation, and mm-hmm. that was that. And then we started taking shifts. Mm-hmm. We were there all night investigating.
Is it something to the, I'm curious about this aspect of it, and I'm not sure where this comes into my mind, but is part of it the thought of, okay, the demon, the whatever it is that's attached to some of these objects, yes, it could be exorcised out, but it's just going to go to something else. Is part of the thinking, okay, these are in a safe, contained environment. You know, this is not, you know, an open to the public exhibit. If they're all going to be here and they're all going to be in this safe, contained environment, this is that many other things that we're keeping here versus letting back out there.
Exactly. It's just good to keep them there. And it's not, you say open, it's not open to the public.
No.
The museum. It was years ago. Due to zoning issues, it's not anymore. But yeah, we keep everything down there. We have a priest come in there once in a while and do the prayer, the binding prayers. And I mean, what else? There's really nothing else we can't do. We can't get rid of it. Mm-hmm. It's like letting the genie out of the bottle. It'll just go somewhere else. Whatever's attached to it. People say, why don't you just burn her? Why don't you just burn all these objects? Because then it very well likely could follow us home. And we need the proof. We need the proof that these things exist. Mm-hmm. To honor their legacy, Ed and Lorraine Warren, and what was most important to them was proving to everyone that the devil exists. So all that stuff is still in there. All their life's work is all sitting down there still in the Warren's Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut.
So recently you were part of an investigation at the Warren's Occult Museum. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but there really hasn't been a lot of quote unquote investigations like this at that location. Is that right?
That's correct. There's been investigators there before, but we did an all-nighter.
Okay.
I mean, we were there till about 5 a.m.
So
there's about 10 of us.
And you had been there prior to this, but yes. Tell me, you know, what were your thoughts going in when this idea was raised of let's do a full-fledged investigation in the museum?
I was a little worried at first because I thought, well, you know, all these objects are dangerous and it's very, you know, just leave them be. But then I thought, you know, if Ed and Lorraine were still alive, I think Ed would just absolutely love the equipment we have nowadays and the technology, and he would want to be part of something like this and further the research. So the more I thought about it, the more excited I got. But at first, I was like, we're kind of poking the bear here. We're going in to communicate with these dark entities. But we went in, and no one was hurt. No one had anything follow them home. And I think we got some pretty substantial evidence that night.
Tell me about how the night began and what began to ensue.
I really wanted to see if Ed and Lorraine would come through. I wasn't all about, let's just run in there and see if any demons want to communicate. That's really not my cup of tea at all. I'd rather not, to be honest with you. I really wanted to speak with Ed and Lorraine. So I was one of the first ones to actually go in and start investigating. Mm-hmm. So I said, let's start in Ed's office, because Ed's office is in the museum, and it's all his life's work. I mean, you sit in there and all his equipment is still in there. All this old school, really neat stuff, old tape recorders and cameras and all his books. It's all in there. So we sat in there and I was using a new piece of equipment. It's called the portal. It's basically an amplifier with a noise gate pedal mm-hmm. and a reverb pedal. And you could plug in whatever type of spirit box you want. So we had started the night off with that. And we had set up a REM pod on Ed's desk, and we just started asking questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't get stuff all the time. Some of the stuff you couldn't really understand, but then it got to a point where we thought Ed was communicating with us through the REM pod, because we would ask, Ed, if you're here right now, let us know. Just hit the REM pod, and then it hit the REM pod, and then and so on and so on. And Tony looked at me, and he's like, Ed always said that if we tried to communicate with him, he would do his best to communicate from the other side with these devices. Because when Ed passed away, it was kind of like the beginning of this new technology coming out with spirit boxes and all that stuff. So that's where we started the evening off. We spent some time in Ed's office. It was myself, Tony, Dan, and we actually had Corey and Jen with us, the owners of the Conjuring House. They were invited to investigate with us as well. They're good friends with us. Mm-hmm. So that's how we started the evening off.
So you start to get those little dabs of communication, it seems, because that's actually was going to be one of my upcoming questions of, do you believe Ed or Lorraine possibly haunt their home or the museum, being a place that they loved, spent so much time?
I don't want to say they haunt their home. They're definitely there from time to time. That's their life's work. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they want to be there?
Sure.
It's a beautiful home. The museum, Ed spent so much time in that museum because his office was in there. So I do believe that they're still there. There's a very good friend of the family that stays there on the weekends, and we go there quite often, and we have breakfast right at Ed and Lorraine's table. And he tells me, he's like, you know, Eric, I see things move in here. I experience things. I know it's Ed and Lorraine, and there's never a sense of fear. So I believe they're there.
What does it feel like? What did it feel like that night of the investigation walking into the museum? I mean, are you getting, I mean, is it a space that feels peaceful? Is it a space that feels, you know, dark and kind of oppressed considering the objects that are in there? I mean, what sort of vibe does it give off?
I'm not going to lie. Every time I go in there, I'm still excited because mm-hmm. I love this stuff.
Sure.
And I always looked up to Ed and Lorraine. So there's never been a time that I've been in there where I was like legit scared.
Mm-hmm.
So I was excited and I was really looking forward to getting some type of substantial evidence, which, you know, I got as the night went on.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other things that happened besides the Annabelle EVP. But yeah, I'm never really scared. It's more just admiring. And like I said, every time I'm in there, I see something new.
Mm-hmm.
Finding paintings of Ed's that no one's seen for years. There's just so much. There's so much really neat stuff down there. If you're into this stuff, it's amazing.
Sure. So, and we'll get to the Annabelle experience that you had, but tell me about some of the other things that went on throughout the evening before we get to them.
Sure. Well, I'll talk about, there's an artifact down there. It's a green dinosaur. And I bring this up because The Conjuring 3 is coming out mm-hmm. soon. The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It. Well, we have a piece. There's an artifact in the museum that is from that actual case. It's a green dinosaur that David Glatzel actually made when he would come under demonic possession quite often, almost every day. And he built this dinosaur, and it was a model. And Ed and Lorraine were at the home because they were spending a lot of time there. That was a very famous case. And Ed saw this dinosaur just walk across the floor on its own volition. Now, this wasn't like a model or something you put batteries in. It was just a piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It walked right across the floor, and a voice emanated from it. Beware, you're all going to die. Well, we actually had the SLS on that particular item for quite some time that night, and we kept getting stick figures appearing. And whenever one of our team members would hold his crucifix over it, his blessed crucifix, it would disappear. And then we threw holy water on it, it would disappear. That kept happening. A little while after that happened, when I was doing spirit box sessions throughout the museum, the name David actually came through the box, and David was the boy that would come under demonic possession, and he's the one that built that dinosaur. So I thought that was something that was pretty interesting that happened that night. That was prior to me getting the Annabelle
sure.
EVP, which was just the highlight of the evening.
Yeah,
personally, and everyone there.
And that was, I mean, that was quite a moment. And you had sent me that EVP, and I shared it out on social media shortly after, because it's such an intriguing piece of audio. I mean, tell me, you know, walk me through what happened. What were you doing and how that all came across.
Well, it was late. It was somewhere around 3 a.m. So there you have it right there, the devil's hour, which we've spoken about this before, the devil's hour. It's anything that happens in threes. It's a mocking of the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And we call it the devil's hour because it's the opposite of when Jesus was crucified. So if there's going to be some type of crazy activity regarding a demonic haunting, it's going to happen around that time. So we were in that time frame. And I just got to the point where I was like, I'm going to wander off on my own here, which so I did. So I started walking down the haunted passageway, and I walked all the way to the back, and I'm all the way in the back of this dirty, dark haunted passageway that's connected to the occult museum. And there's a casket all the way in the back that has to do with a really old case. Years ago, I forget what year, but it was a young man who, he thought he was a vampire, and he used to sleep in this casket every night. Well, this casket's all the way in the back of that passageway. So I was back there, and I put my I was using a spirit box, not the newer one. I really like the PSP-7T, but I actually got it's an old Radio Shack hacked ghost box, the 12587. This is what investigators would use years ago before they started making the new PSP-7s. So I was using that. And I was all the way in the back, and I put it on the casket, and I just start asking questions. Who's here? Because I was hearing noises back there. That's another reason why I walked all the way back there. Said, who lured me back here? A voice actually came through that said Annabelle, but it wasn't as loud as the one that I sent you. Started asking some more questions. It actually said Tony. Well, Tony is the leader of our team. Mm-hmm. I think I asked, do you have a message for one of us? And it said Tony. Then I started to walk back down towards the museum. And when I was about, I was like in the middle of the passageway, and it just spit out Annabelle. And you heard my reaction.
Yeah,
that was just a perfect mix of excitement and fear, because right away in my mind, I'm like, oh, my God, like there's no denying that said Annabelle. It's the devil's hour. I'm in the museum and I'm walking towards her case. Mm-hmm. I in my mind, I'm like, oh, my God, what if like by the time I get to the museum, she like moved maybe she's out of the case. What if she's somewhere else in the museum, and for the first time we're all going to be witness to her actually teleporting? Totally freaked me out, but I was really excited. I was proud, because one of my main things as an investigator, I love getting voices, I love EVPs, I love ITC research. So when I ran back into Ed and Lorraine's house, which is where everyone else was hanging out in there, and I showed Tony, everyone was like, that was amazing, because I was live streaming. They're like, you're the first person to ever get an EVP that says Annabelle and in the museum. And that was the high point for me.
Yeah.
Who was that? What was it? I don't know. I spoke to people about that. Like, why would the demon still be referring to itself as Annabelle? Mm-hmm. Well, think of all the recognition and all the energy we've given this dark entity over the years because of the Conjuring movies and the Annabelle movies. That's what it's known as. And that's what it first told people its name was in order to get recognition. So why would it say another name? Why would it say some other name? I mean, Annabelle, clear as day, Annabelle.
Mm-hmm. An interesting question and something to think about with a ghost box, and when you get answers like that, and this thing, Annabelle, being behind its you know, quote unquote, protective case. However, you know, you didn't have your radio inside the case. You were in a different part of the room. You were in that area of it. But the fact that it's coming through on your radio, you know, through the ghost box and saying Annabelle, I guess my question is about proximity to you and how that message was given through the radio. Is this was that spirit, was that demon outside of the case? I mean, can that does that thing really, you know, totally encapsulize, you know, the energy or the entity of whatever is there? Or did that thing walk up to you and give you that message?
It doesn't matter where it is. I think that entity could leave there from time to time, depending on how strong it is. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that it's a low-level demon, mm-hmm. but the first thing I thought of when I heard that was, it kind of freaked me out. I'm like, what if like she ends up, what if as I'm walking towards the walkway into the museum, if she's like out of the cage, what if she's like standing right here?
Yeah.
You know, I would hear those stories that she would do that sometimes. Ed said that she would sometimes move around. And that was my first thought. I mean, cause I, it was just so clear. I mean, I've gotten some pretty good EVPs before, but considering where I was, I mean, come on. And you got to remember, too, people will be like, oh, well, somebody said it on the radio. Really? Somebody said Annabelle on the radio at like 3:15 in the morning while I was scanning backwards on a broken ghost hack box?
Yeah.
Come on. Because that's essentially what they are. They're old radio sack radios, and you hack them, and then they become spirit boxes.
Sure. That wraps up part one of our conversation with Eric Vitale about Inside the Warrens Occult Museum. In part two, we'll ask, what prevents Annabelle from teleporting out of its case today? What happened with Ed and Lorraine's pets the night of the investigation? What is the story behind The Devil Made Me Do It? And are there any objects in Ed and Lorraine Warren's Occult Museum scarier than Annabelle? We'll discuss all of that and more. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Simply go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and click Become a Gravekeeper, or our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper there. $5 a month gets you access to all of our episodes in their entirety, part one and part two, as well as our entire archive of episodes, hundreds of them waiting for you to binge away on all of it ad-free. So if you like the show, help keep us on the air and become a Gravekeeper. Patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.